You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, thanks for hitting play. Welcome to The Come Up. My name is Matt. And on this episode, a conversation with Artie Frushan. This is a fun one. Artie and I had never met before this. I had seen him on HBO's House of the Dragon and honestly was truly blown away by his performance in Tom Stoppard's new play, Leopoldstadt, on Broadway. So this was exciting for me, because I was genuinely interested in getting to know him. On our almost two-hour call, which I have condensed for you, we talked about identity, the meaning of the word artist, discipline, music, the craft of acting, and he ended up asking me some pretty thoughtful questions too. So whether you know Artie or not, I think you'll enjoy this. He's a really down-to-earth and kind-hearted guy, and I'm so grateful that he agreed to chat with me. So without further ado, here is Artie Frushan. Where in the city are you? Are you in Midtown?
I'm in Midtown. I'm in the bubbling, frothing heart of Midtown, which is, it's a lot. It's like, it's irresistibly convenient, you know? And lots of people are like, oh, why don't you move somewhere cool? And I'm like, yeah, but it's 6 minutes walk to work, which is good. But
right, and that's why you're here.
That's why I'm here. Right.
Have you been to New York before?
A couple of times as an adult, very briefly, for like a week or two. And I just always left with this slightly nagging conviction that like, this probably needs to be there sort of
in New York.
Permanently. Yeah. Because as a Londoner, yeah, you kind of think that maybe London is the center of the world. And then you come to New York and you're like, oh, no. This is it.
How has it been being here?
It's been amazing. I do wish my experience of New York extended a bit beyond Midtown, I got to say. And it does occasionally, but...
Was Broadway's always sort of a North Star for you? I know you went to Lambda, so I know you obviously were, you know, thinking of like acting and performing. You wanted to do that, but was Broadway like on the docket or was it like...
I mean, you know, it's on the docket in the way that winning an Oscar's on the docket. Like, it's not, it doesn't feel like an achievable goal, really.
Interesting. Okay.
I've never had that, like, lofty expectations of my career. But then the further you get into it, I guess the loftier they get, or the more you allow yourself to. Of course, I always wanted to be an actor. I never took it seriously as a career. So it was kind of a surprise to me that I got into a good drama school. And then when I actually booked a job afterwards, I was like, well, that's great. And anything else is a bonus. But then, of course, once you get a sniff of it, then, you know, you start to smell blood and you get...
Of course. Are you finding all these things that you've done, you know, artistically fulfilling? Like, are you finding it to be like filling up your cup enough?
Totally. As I said, I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to work, and not only to work at all, but to work on projects that are meaty, you know? Yeah, I mean, of course, with the bittier screen roles, like, you know, my role in House of the Dragon is quite tertiary, really. Like, it's lovely, and I enjoyed it. It was just enough to get me obsessed, but it was,
right,
like, not, you know, filling in the way that you were sort of describing. You know what's funny? Like, at drama school, they were always trying to encourage us to think of ourselves as artists, and I've always had a real problem with thinking of myself as an artist. I've had a very, like, rigid academic upbringing schooling, and which kind of works, that kind of lives in a world of like quantifiable metrics of like marks and grades and
right,
like jumping through hoops.
An artist is not that.
It's not
at
that
all.
At all. And you know, like I have an artistic sensibility, of course, but what I've tried to do since I left drama school was like take myself out of that very like frontal lobe kind of intellectually. Like, I'm not saying I'm an intellectual, I'm really not, but like that kind of more cerebral way of approaching work and trying to just like feel out what the inner artist, I hate how I'm sounding right now. But
no,
you know
I love
saying
it. I'm so into it.
The inner artist, like trying to nourish that and like get to know it, and like who, you know, when I'm sort of tap into something a bit more irrational. It's funny with stage, I guess, because you do it so often, you can really feel like you've like had a 360 degree kind of experience of that role. I mean, we're still in the early stages, relatively speaking, of this run, and there's much left to explore with the characters, even though we're doing the same scenes every night. But I guess you can slightly feel like you've not mastered it, of course, like you can never like master
something.
But you
figured out the moves. Yeah, right. You figured out the moves.
Right, and you threshed it out, you know. And, you know, once you've done that, you're like, okay, well, what's next? But I'm not, you know, I don't feel that at all with this play. I mean, the writing is so rich. The characters are so brilliantly nuanced and fully realized that you know, you don't get bored. And I really mean that. I'm not just saying that for like press reasons. Like it's endlessly, endlessly novel to me doing this show. Yeah.
And obviously both of the parts that you're playing are really rich. You have that antagonist in the first, and then the second is sort of I don't know, it sort of busts the play open in a way that I guess in the audience, like, I didn't expect at all.
Yeah, it feels like that's where Tom Stoppard like departs from the sort of conventional account of the Holocaust, which is very important. I think he does it beautifully.
Yeah.
But where he sort of talks about things of like, yeah, like memory and heritage and just the meaning of and like identity and like the whole kind of experience of the aftermath, and which is the current experience that
right.
Jews have of, you know, what it's like to be a second generation, third generation survivor, or what is, you know, and that's I feel like it's beautiful the way he does it and encapsulate it in a tea party. The final scene is like a tea party. It's like a tea party that goes wrong, which Patrick, the director, always described it as, which I thought was a lovely way of thinking about it. But yeah, you travel all the way from ignorance and like kind of carefree kind of demeanor of someone who lives in the modern world, which like, if you're lucky and you live in certain places in the West, you don't come into daily contact with, you know, atrocity, mm-hmm. and to then sort of be sort of thrown into the, or to have your eyes opened to the kind of full extent of what happened is within, anyway, it's just very beautifully done. And yeah, it is another dimension, like say, I think that last scene.
It got me thinking about my identity as a Jewish person, uh-huh. and how I relate to my ancestors or just my heritage and my culture.
Yeah.
I read something that you had said that it had tickled something in you too. There was something in there that, you know, as someone who's born in America, British, Iranian, like it all kind of, I don't know, it sparked something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think there's a kind of universal, it's a universally kind of relatable, almost universally relatable experience that, I mean, if I say that a bit tentatively because the Jewish experience is so unique and, you know, you can't just like say, oh,
of course,
well, everyone,
of course,
you know,
yes.
But yes, I mean, for me, as someone who, like I say, yeah, like you say, I was born in America and I grew up largely in, I was completely anglicized basically, as you can hear, and by my education, my mother herself is very English. But yeah, my father is fully Iranian. He had this completely different upbringing and DNA, and my whole entire family is Iranian. They speak Persian, and my father, I guess, had other things on his mind when I was growing up and didn't see it as a priority to kind of induct me into the world of mm-hmm. his culture and his country, partly because he was so enamored of British culture, was preoccupied with becoming, with westernizing himself, I think.
Huh.
And so I've always had this kind of strange like shadow of, especially with, you know, like identity politics and the place that we're at within the industry and within society at large with diversity,
right.
et cetera, of like this moment of returning to our roots and, you know, and celebrating that and mm-hmm. And not kind of homogenizing ourselves. Yeah, it's been really interesting for me. That's how I access the character and how I kind of how I find common ground with Leo, the character, because yeah, I think yeah, it's this kind of rediscovering of a sort of phantom limb of like who you are and like realizing that you just not. There's like been an empty space inside you that you've not really been acknowledging your whole life, and then suddenly.
Do you feel that way? Do you feel like there, has that been like that for you?
It's difficult because for Leo, he literally was growing up. He had a lived experience of that he is literally repressed, which is a different and interesting
right.
phenomenon about memory. It's like It's not that he was always in the UK. It's that he's basically dissolved an entire part of his history. As a sort of self-preservation tool, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But No, for me, it's interesting. I never lived in Iraq. I've never been to the country. I can't go because of military service reasons and all other sorts of things. So for me, it's more of an interesting thing to discover and to take ownership of, as opposed to reclaim. Although I do feel like, I do feel there's some element of reclaiming needed, because it is, I don't know, it's just funny. It's just what's inside me. It's like, it's just part of me. But if no one had told me, if I had been adopted, I wouldn't know, you know. So it's something that I'm kind of enjoying, exploring. But that said, that's just my own personal kind of corner of my experience at this play, because it's not about that really. It's about, like I say, it's about Jewishness, and it's about the experience of coming to terms with your family's history.
So in the process of doing this piece in London and over here, how is it transforming you? Like as an artist, like what has it been doing for you in where you're at in your life and your journey?
I mean, it's interesting. There's a certain maturity that it's brought out in me as an actor and as a person as well, because, you know, I'm not like slaying a CGI dragon, and I'm right. not that I do that in House of the Dragon, but, you know, I'm not kind of firing a crossbow and like pretending to be a taxi driver or something. It's like, it's you have to confront the material itself. Is it demands engagement and thought, and so it's kind of one of those rare moments that I hope won't be that rare in my career of doing something that is like really worthwhile, and a message that is like worthwhile telling and spreading daily at this time in particular, right now. Because there is a resurgent tide of anti-Semitism. So in terms of my personal experience of it, rising to meet my work as something, as a person, and not just as an actor and as a member of society, you know, and of like how I'm lucky enough to be able to contribute to the debate or to the education that is so necessary about this thing, and actually how I can use my skills as an actor to contribute positively to society, which other than like giving someone something to do on a Sunday night, which is nice as well. But
not something that you necessarily think about. I mean, maybe in drama school, you're like, I want to give back and be a part, you know, and like do something important with my art, which is of course, like that's a noble sort of cause. But when you're confronted with the actuality of it in this case, like, you know, doing this piece in a weird way, like you said, it sounds like you have to sort of like you said, like live up to that. You start taking yourself seriously in a way that maybe you weren't before.
Yeah, and engaging in conversations about it outside of the play as well, and not to become an activist so much, but sort of in a way.
No, an artivist,
Prushan. Yeah, I mean, and also, you know, personally, it's just an you know what it's like to do theater. It's an extraordinary workout, and like you know, you can hone you just get to act every day. So you're just hoping that in small ways you're kind of honing what you do. And the standards of doing a Stoppard play, which like the text is so demanding, the way the play demands to be played. It can't be lazy. You can't and like, you know, you need to be extremely disciplined and rigorous to make it work, or else the play just doesn't really.
Not everything's like that.
No, you know?
A lot. There's lots that has flexibility.
Totally. No, it's basically classical in lots of ways. Like it demands a sort of that kind of discipline to make it work and to make it sing. And it's just an extremely amazing chance to like try and fine tune that discipline. And, you know, it's also Broadway, for fuck's sake. Like there's a certain standard that, you know, however shit you're feeling that day or however uninspired, you know, people have paid X amount for a ticket. The writer is one of the greatest playwrights of all time, and you're on Broadway. Like it demands something of you, and it's like an extraordinary thing.
But is that something you're thinking about, like you know, I'm not all the time, but obviously I imagine it comes up sometimes for you that you're like, oh, wait a sec, this is, I'm doing this right now. This is my, I have to go to work right now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I think we're starting to get into the period now where we are all quite fatigued. You know, it's been 2 months of 8 shows a week. You do start to have days where you're like, oh, you know what? I just can't be bothered today. Or, you know, or mm-hmm. I don't have what it takes to stand there in front of 1,000 people and go through like a generational trauma like tonight.
Yeah.
And maybe tomorrow, but it's Tuesday. And, you know, but then, yeah, so you have to kind of just that kind of quick slap around the face of like, no, this is really, on so many levels, this is really, really serious.
Yeah.
And deserves and demands your full commitment is a good thing for me, I think. Yes. Yeah.
Are you a disciplined person otherwise?
I think I am. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. I guess you said like academics and grades and shit. Like then you kind of have to be.
I wish I was more crazy and rebellious and like, you know, just like a mad disheveled artist who turns up late and like smokes weird Peruvian cigarettes and stuff. But I'm not. I genuinely do. I am very disciplined. And like I said, I didn't expect to be an actor until the last minute, really. And the last 5 years has been a process of like adjusting to allow myself to be a little bit less by the book, you know, in lots mm-hmm. of ways. But yeah, I am disciplined, and theatre sort of rewards or lives alongside that discipline, because it is, whereas
certainly.
I think, you know what I mean? And I think actually with screen, it's a case of being a bit naughtier and being a little, I mean, I don't know, there's room for naughtiness in all media on,
of
I think,
course.
As an actor. But it rewards discipline, especially this play.
How are you filling your days? Are you writing?
It's
are
funny
you...
with the writing. I kind of know that at some point in my life I will come to that, but I'm just obsessed with trying to get better at acting right now. Like people are like, oh, do you want to direct? Do you want to write? I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm trying to learn how to act right now, and so I'm not quite. I mean, I do write the odd like crap poem, you know. But that's just.
But that's interesting though, because I think a lot of people, like you said, a lot of people, especially actors, you know,
yeah.
it can be a very, what's the word? Like not disempowering, but you're in a you can be in a pretty passive position as an actor, right?
Totally.
You're at the mercy of, you know, obviously on stage it's you every night, but you're at the mercy of the director and the creative team and film especially. I mean, you're really at the mercy of the editing and. Everyone else, the hundreds of people that are around you. And so I find a lot of actors are like hungry to get on the other side or they're, and then maybe that's just the community I'm in that I'm around people that are like hungry for everything and want to be doing a million things at once.
No, in London, it's this, my community of actors and directors.
Really?
And it's all the same. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what, in times of in fallow months and years, which I've absolutely had, yeah, I write, but and I'm you know I actually have to acknowledge how privileged I am to not have to like I say resort to it. It shouldn't be that, because it's such a wonderful thing, and you know if you're good at it and you can be so fulfilling and lead to, you can create work for yourself. And I'm just lucky enough right now to not be doing that. But yeah, I do think of myself as more of an interpreter. I'm not bursting with ideas to write about yet.
Yo, that's interesting.
I think that I will get there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have thoughts about things and opinions. It's not the season for me right now to be doing that. I'm just obsessed with like the craft of acting.
Of acting.
Right now, that's again quite a pretentious thing to say, but I
No, to me that's super interesting. Like I'm super curious about that, because I don't meet a lot of people that feel that way.
Yeah,
I feel like it's rare to meet people that are really hungry to again learn the craft of acting, because it is a craft. You know, there are approaches and sort of ways of going about it. That I mean, obviously, I find that fun, but that's like one of the 37 things that I do.
And yeah, so and you know what? I wish I were more like you. I really.
Yeah, but I wish I was more like you. You know what I mean? I wish I could like dive deep in and really get into it.
Yeah, but you can. You know, you can. And I, you know, and like before I knew I was going to be an actor, I was kind of good at languages And I was like kind of good at guitar and music, but not really. And I was like a bit sporty, but like not really good enough to bother with any of that. And then like I was good at acting. It was like loads of little things that I was like, but it was kind of frustrating to me. And what I love about being an actor is just this being able to just zero in on this extremely unique, kind of mystical art, and like just completely obsessing and spending every day like watching, feeling, learning, kind of, you know, just trying to just, you know, I've always loved the idea of like being a doctor or, you know, other professions that are just so singular, and that you can just spend your whole life becoming obsessed with. And like, I just love that I found something.
Acting is mystical. You know what I mean? Like
it is. Yeah.
And it's fun that it gets to be, you're right in that like it can be as disciplined, for lack of a better word, as like being a doctor. It can be as sort of straight and narrow as that, right? You can be like, I'm going to zoom in and hone in on this thing.
Yeah.
And there's this mysticism about it. There is this sort of ephemeral, you can't quite wrap your arms around it. You know, there isn't a grade. There isn't pass and fail.
Much to my frustration. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's ineffable. And that's why, you know, people chase it long after their careers should be over, really. And that's, you know, and like, yeah. And it's, that's what drives you mad as well. And in your kind of madder moments, you'll be like, oh God, like, I'm never going to crack it and I don't enjoy it. And I come off set and I'm like, oh, that was just, I don't know what I'm doing. And I, you know, but that's, yeah, it's like a sort of abusive lover that you just keep going back to.
You know what? The arts can really feel that way sometimes.
Yeah,
really.
It's kind of crazy.
Is there a particular like school or approach of acting that you're like particularly interested in at the moment that you're like kind of digging your teeth into?
I mean, I don't subscribe to like one school or anything. I mean, the drama school I went to, Lambda, had a really lovely approach, I think, of like letting you sample different approaches, and instead of having a didactic thing of like, this is how you must do it.
Yeah.
So of course Stanislavski and, you know, Uta Hagen, kind of more traditional approaches, and then like with Screen, like Meisner, you know all that kind of stuff I've sort of dipped my toe into. Yeah, with the Screen stuff, I guess a sort of Meisner-y approach of just like of not planning. Again, it's like trying to work against my like control freak academic instincts, which are to like control and to plan and to fix things, and just like
know really the right answers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Knowing how you must play a certain beat or whatever, and actually, it's just really exhilarating to try and like dare myself to just not do any of that. And even on stage, of course, things are rehearsed and placed in a way that must be there to take care of the storytelling. But it's kind of, I'm trying to just risk a bit more. It's not an approach or a school, but just try to be a bit more, a bit naughtier in my approach, really.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is it hard to, not hard, but, or maybe it's fun to watch like television and movies, or are you watching the acting?
I'm
as
always
well.
Watching the acting.
Yeah, okay.
It's completely ruined. Being an actor's ruined everything for me. I have no joy in any tool. I have to watch MasterChef. That is the only thing that I like.
Hey, which why not?
No, true.
British Bake Off. I mean, that's all I need.
Bake Off is addictive. I like Bake Off, but I prefer savory things. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'm more of a MasterChef man. But yeah, no, I'm inevitably just assessing their choices. I'm like, that's interesting they chose to do that. And you just watch really good people. You're like, why is this good? And, you know, and I love that kind of study. But yeah, it is like my brain is whirring. I'm sitting there on the sofa, like twitching and, you know, like just like mindlessly just shoveling blueberries into my mouth whilst like sort of, you know.
Man,
looking
I thought you were going to say like potato chips or something. Blueberries.
No. The blueberries precede the potato chips.
Okay,
and then it's the,
okay,
and then
okay,
it's the
okay,
Butterfingers,
okay.
Which is a recent thing.
Great,
anyway,
okay, thank you.
Don't worry. I'm not this kind of like, you know, Orlando Bloom-esque,
hey.
Like green powders, and I don't do that. Anyway, yeah, it's ruined. It's ruined watching stuff for me. But again, I kind of love it. Yeah.
What are you loving right now? What are you watching? What are actors or, you know, what are you into right now?
I'm watching Why Lotus, like a lot of people, I guess.
We haven't started the new season.
You haven't started? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. It's really good. And it's a particularly impressive kind of nuanced naturalism that is just it's just quite impressive to watch as an actor. Something I haven't really had the chance to do proper naturalism, actually.
Right, naturalism.
I've done a lot of like fantasy, which is quite, you know, stylized,
elevated. Yeah.
You know, this play is a sort of what is he call it, Patrick, sort of like poetical naturalism. I kind of some sort of,
yeah, cause I was gonna say there is some,
there are naturalistic
naturalism
elements.
Yeah.
You can buy into it as a world, but it is ultimately, the characters are just much much wittier and much faster thinking and much more eloquent than anyone could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
There's no umming and ahhing. But yeah, so that's something that I'm interested in and I'm doing more is yeah, just straight naturalism, I guess. And what else? I saw The Banshees of Inisherin the other
day. How was?
Incredible. I mean, I was really worried it was going to be just a rehashing of the kind of, you know, very successful dynamic of Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell and just like rolling out the same relationship from In Bruges, which is one of my favorite films. But no, it's a perfect film. Honestly, it's like a perfect little film. It actually inspired me to write a bit, which is,
whoa,
as I've said, it's a rare thing. Yeah, because it's just like, it, you don't need to have an extraordinarily inspired like take on something.
Epic,
it's,
yeah, right.
Yeah, it's just a story about, it's a relationship. It's like a relationship exercise. And the script is beautiful. It's hilarious. It's heartbreaking. And the performances are, yeah, brilliant. So those are the two things that I've been watching recently that I've kind of been creatively like, you know, admiring.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of music are you into? I'm so curious.
I'm obsessed
curious.
With music. Yeah.
You are?
What, yeah.
What
about, what's your, just like, because I know you're like, what are you a musical, do you musical theater and stuff?
Okay, so I'll give you the brief. The brief is,
brief me.
I went to school for musical theater.
Okay, wow, right.
I went to Boston Conservatory, so I was there, came here.
Yeah.
Actor, singer, songwriter.
Wow.
Ended up somehow, because of my sort of creative skills, my creative skill set, with technology, like I ended up being able to create my own content.
Uh-huh.
And so that landed me a role as basically like a host. Like I was interviewing people on opening nights of Broadway shows on red carpets for 3 or 4 years or something. But
wow.
I would play games. That was like my gag. It was like Billy on the Street, but for Broadway, basically.
Okay.
And and in the midst of all this was taking acting gigs and, you know, doing this and that. And I'm really all over the place. And honestly, this was sort of born out of my love of connecting deeply with people. Like, I just like having deep conversations. I can't I can't help it. I mean, I went to acting school, so like, I think that's sort of in all of our blood.
Yeah,
we
all
just kind of like that, like that good
it's
juicy
funny,
talk.
I kind of love being in America and being amongst Americans because they're just a little more open to that kind of thing. I mean, like, basically, yeah, British people just are so squeamish about that sort of stuff, myself included. You know, I really like, I keep censoring myself and like kind of being like, oh no, let's not.
I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't
go
there.
Yeah, or just come on, mate. Who do you think you are? But it is so lovely to be able to delve more like earnestly into things.
And I, you know, what I loved about doing the red carpets and the way and the games that I did was, and this was not my intention in the beginning, but what ended up happening was, you know, because even Americans, when you're at the opening night of a show, and especially on a press line where like you're getting asked the same three questions by every single person, you get into this kind of rhythm and you sort of know what to say and you know how to present yourself and you sort of know where you're at. And then all of a sudden people would come to me and I'd be like, name three things that are purple. And people would, that facade is gone.
I just had a small panic attack.
Exactly.
You, yeah.
And the facade is gone. All of a sudden, like the real person shows up.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I'm so glad you weren't at all.
That was, it was so, I ended up falling in love with it because it was so refreshing to meet people in that moment of like realism, like just total honesty. And that kind of, it's how I formed like so many of the friendships and relationships I have with people in the business, because they were like, oh, you're different. This is cool and interesting. And so then to bring that over into this, you know, that's my sort of hope is, I think so much of I was just having a conversation with a very good friend about this, who's done very well in the industry. And he was like, you know, for whatever reason, there's this, in theater especially, it's a very, let me start with TV and film. TV and film, you can't wrap your arms around, right? Like, you being on an Amazon show is not the same as someone being on a Disney Plus show. It's just not. Like, you guys will probably never know each other. You don't, you know?
Yeah.
But in the theater, especially in the New York theater community, it is small. It is insular. It's like a club. And so there's this fear that comes up, especially with, I think, people from America that have always wanted to be on Broadway.
Yeah.
There's this fear that if I say something wrong or I do something wrong, that I'm going to be booted out of the club.
Yeah.
And so people really try to like keep that, you know, just keep stay presentable and keep things sort of tight knit. And my hope and what feel very grateful that I've found with the people that I've been able to talk to is like, I want that openness. I want that honesty. Like, I want the raw, real thing. Because that's, to me, is like more interesting. And it's the thing that I didn't have as a kid. Like, I grew up admiring Broadway and theater.
Yeah.
But my only sort of exposure was what I saw on Playbill.com, Broadway.com, Theater Mania. Nothing wrong with those things. But what happens
kind of posterized.
Correct.
Yeah.
It creates this fake version of the thing. And then all of a sudden, and this is happening to people, I mean, it's happened for everybody, but I know people, especially around our generation, who have this idea of what this thing is going to be when they get, you know, when they get to Broadway.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's shattered because it was built up in their mind as some great thing. This was going to solve all my problems. I'm going to be set for life. I'll be happy. And
interesting.
Then you get there and it's,
and no one's talking
great.
About the disenchantment of, well, like the potential for this disenchantment when you get there. Yeah.
And I think that's important. Like, I just think that's an important perspective, you know, and not to say that I don't want to like discourage people from pursuing a life in the arts. That's not at all what I'm after, but I that's why, like, I mean, the byline of the show is like, honest conversations about the reality of being a growing artist. Like, what is it really like, you know, to be in this?
I mean, that's why, totally. So, and I really applaud you for doing that. And now you're describing it. I'm like, wow, it is super rare. There are hundreds of acting podcasts, but, you know, to really like have as your mission statement, like kind of warts and all kind of, you know, under the skin sort of discussion about this sort of stuff is like really, it's rare and it's really wonderful. But I think it's just, I mean, you must have talked about this endless times in your podcast, and I've listened to a couple with some of your former guests, and you guys always touch on it. But like, it just highlights how important it is that your approach to work and your approach to life and your approach to yourself, that's what's important, really. It doesn't matter what work you're doing or whatever, because where you are, it's like, of course it helps, and of course it allows you to frame yourself in a kinder way when you're sort of presenting yourself to yourself. But like, you know, you'll never be happy. You'll never be happy. You'll never be satisfied. You'll always feel unfulfulfilled
We're always growing. Like, we're always, there's no arrival. Like, there is no point.
Yeah.
At least from what I found, you know, like, I was talking to Lena Hall, who's like Tony winner, you know, really? Like, you would think that, like, that's kind of like, she's like, I made it. I'm good. Yeah. And like, no, she still struggles with things, you know? And I think logically we know that, but to hear about it and have someone talk about it in an honest way, I just think it's so powerful.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I have it, you know, I'm sure we've all had that. But like I said, when I first was like, look, once I have one acting job, I'll be happy.
Right.
And then I did it and I was like, you know, just learning to be content and happy in what you're doing at the time is something, a good practice, I think. It's difficult though, because you're just forced always as an actor to be looking for the next job. You know that, the contract is up at a certain point, at which point you will be completely empty-handed again. So you're forced, like, whilst you're doing a job that you might be really enjoying, you're forced to be like looking beyond it, and you know, and
there's the hum of anxiety sort of just always underneath.
Yeah, right? And it gets louder and louder the closer you get to the end, and it's hard to just be happy where you are, but it's important to. Yeah.
And I think, listen, there is a very small percentage of people that get to continually work, that get to work and work and work and work and work. And I love that for them. I'm like, love that. But I think the majority of people have that thing that you and I were talking about of like, there is just this like sense of, well, what's next? You know, like what's going to happen after this?
Yeah. There are certain actors who I've grown up with who are really successful now, but who've always managed to have that attitude of like, just that quiet faith that they'll get the next job and that it's going to be okay. And of course, that's like the golden snitch of mindsets. Like, you just desperately want to somehow have that. But
that is so well said.
You know what I mean?
It's the golden snitch of mindsets.
It is.
Yes,
it's like,
it is.
Just, and as long as you don't let it tip over into entitlement or arrogance. Mm-hmm. But like, just being, having quiet faith, like, you know, something will come. And actually, yeah, for those people, it has worked out, you know, because yeah, you just don't allow anxiety to cloud your sense of self.
Quiet
and your
faith.
Approach to things.
I like that. Quiet.
Yeah.
Quiet faith. Just a trust, you know,
exactly.
That, like, that in yourself and also in the process, you know, you have to sort of accept, you're like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now, and whatever will come. And I think the pandemic really sort of highlighted that it can all go away in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like, it can all just kind of
completely,
it can just all stop.
Yeah. I really can't believe that I'm doing a play right now. And actually, when I got L'Aéroport in London, I was like, the last thing I thought I would be doing after the pandemic was a play. And I was like,
really?
And it sort of saved me, like, not spiritually, that's too extreme.
No, listen, I'm spiritual, so let's go there. Yeah, I'm really into that.
I mean, I think I have a spiritual dimension to me, but I wouldn't describe myself as a spiritual person, but just the kind of spiritual, like, barrenness of lockdown, and the sense of rudderlessness, and you know, and the anxiety of it, and the kind of humdrum, slightly like cagey, edgy nature of that time, was difficult for me. And I'm naturally quite a buoyant person. I'm lucky enough not to have suffered from serious depression ever. Like, I'm very lucky on those fronts. But
girl, you are lucky.
No, I know. I really know. And I don't, you know, like, almost all of my friends are like clinically depressed.
Yeah.
I don't know why I laugh. It's always awful. But like, I'm, you know, but what I'm saying is that period for me, I was on the brink of struggling mentally in a way that I had never done before, as we all were. Anyway, so getting a play and being like welcomed into the bosom of a sort of bustling quirky, like warm and wonderful family, like the cast of Leopoldstadt, was just like, you know, just the tonic. It was like this sort of amazing, like I say, it kind of saved me at that time. And because it's such a unique environment, that the theater, it's like this, like being by the hearth somehow in so many ways, like the sort of warm glowing lights of a theater and the audience. And I remember the first night that we opened, the Leopoldstadt technically reopened August 2021, and it was the first proper reopening of a show on the West End.
Oh, you guys were first. Wow.
Well, there were a couple of others, but they were like short, like little 2 week runs. They were kind of little experiments, a lot of which Sonia Friedman, who produced Leopoldstadt, also organized. There was a kind of like, it was like a sort of little re-entry season that was like just a month or two of like just kind of trying out little shows here and there, which I went to a couple, but Leopoldstadt was like the first proper show to open in earnest again after the pandemic. And, you know, the curtain going up and seeing a sea of masked,
oh my God,
masked, or a completely full house of surgical masks, was like weird and eerie, but also just heart, like just like so emotional, you know? And it was like I don't want to be too kind of overblown here, but it felt like a historic moment of like, you know, theater is back and the industry is kind of has made it.
Because we weren't sure.
There
was really, and I it's so hard to, I'm like, how are we going to explain this to people in the future? Like, there was really a sense that like this could go away. We were like, we don't know if this can sustain through
time. I don't know if I had it here, but in the UK, they were like telling people to retrain. They were like, you got to do coding now. I was like, really?
Oh my God.
It was like, and I was starting to think like, shit, maybe I can't sustain myself as an actor. And, you know, so I got insanely lucky by getting such a wonderful job that, you know, in terms of its material, but really also in terms of the life of it, which is still the case. Yeah, here. I mean, it's like
I'm sure you can tell people are psyched to be back in the theater. People are like really. I know as an audience member. I mean, certainly as an actor too. It's incredible to be on stage for the first time again and be like, oh my God, right, we're doing this again. I forgot that this is the thing, that this is how this feels. But as an audience too, man, it feels like really good to be going and seeing shit, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. And you start to think of the last 2 years as like a weird fever dream. And like you've woken up and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's sort of
and not as something traumatic that we all went through, like, because it was, you know, like
it was totally traumatic. Yeah. And you've got to exercise a certain amount of denial.
Yeah, but we didn't, or I would say I have had a hard time like acknowledging that was a traumatic thing, that all of a sudden the rug was pulled out. I mean, I was doing a show in Milwaukee up until in the US, we closed. We were supposed to extend. We did not extend because one of the actors couldn't stay. We closed on Sunday. I flew back to New York on Monday. I went and got my nails done with my friend on Wednesday. And on Thursday night, it was supposed to be the opening of Six on Broadway. I was supposed to go to the opening and do like the opening red carpet.
Right.
And that was when the world shut down. So like,
wow.
I had just gotten back. I was like, oh my God, I have some momentum. Like I'm on the heels, you know, of this thing. And then to have it just completely ripped out was, and again, especially in the beginning, it was like, oh, 2 weeks. Oh, a month. Oh, 2 months. Well, we'll have summer. Like, we're going to have a summer.
Yeah.
And then to just kind of be in it for as long as we were.
So strange. And it's just so strange because that still feels like it was just the other day. And now I'm like basically 30 and like it's 2022 and we're literally living in the future. And it's sort of, the world is kind of exploding right now in so many ways.
Yeah, there's a metaverse. Like we're in the future.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I'm just glad that we're intact still. And they said, you know, they said this, didn't they? Like about theater, they said theater will suffer and it won't recover and then, you know, people compare it to saying that when the cinema, I can't remember what the direct comparison is, but it's like when movies and cinemas came around, everyone was like, oh, people are going to stop going to the theater.
Yep. Well, same thing with TV. People are like, oh, no one's going to go see movies anymore. You know, it's like video killed the radio. Like it keeps happening, you know?
But it's just cool. It's just cool that it persists and that there is appetite for it. It's just really, really heartening.
Well, we've been around forever. I mean, think we were before radio and we were before any of that. Like the Greeks, like we were there, you know, like
we were doing it OG style back in the day. We were, yeah. No, it's so awesome that people are coming to see
live theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's just easy to be like, oh no, it's expensive. And it's a bit stressful because of COVID.
We're seeing a lot of concerts too. Cause I missed.
You are?
Yeah. Because I think I've said this before.
I need to go and see some music here.
Yeah. Well, you're a little busy.
No,
I don't
sure.
know if you know. No,
but Monday nights, maybe.
Yeah.
That's when
Monday, that's really when the concerts really go off.
Oh, yeah.
I've said this before, but I really think, and this is why I think I feel similarly at concerts as I do in theaters, is there is this sense that, I don't know if this is quite the correct term, but it's called collective effervescence. And there is the sense that we're all sharing this one experience that's happening only this one time. We're all on this wave together. And even if it's not something we're consciously thinking about, there's like a subconscious kind of energy, something that is running through everybody in that space and all of our collective energy. And we just feel it, just, it's different. You know, we feel like we're a part of something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
And I feel that when I'm in a theater, certainly. I definitely feel that when I'm at a concert. Like that's.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I went to, I don't know if do you know Glastonbury Festival?
Of course, I'm a big music
fan. No, I say
fan,
that.
So yeah, I know.
Right. But I don't mean to be patronizing, but I've just said this to some Americans, and they're like, I don't know what
they're
that
like,
is.
What
I'm
is
like,
that?
It's the biggest music festival in the world. But anyway, let's not split hairs. But anyway, yeah. So I went for the first time this year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I ended up getting a ticket by just saying I'd volunteer, basically pulling pints and serving like drunk festival heads, and. Yeah, there was a kind of like religious kind of vibe. Of
certainly.
Like, you know, it was the first one after 3 years. And
who was headlining?
It was Paul McCartney and Kendrick Lamar. Just a classic, like hilarious sort of dichotomy. And they were like the Pet Shop Boys. But yeah, Glastonbury is ridiculous. Like everyone any normal music festival, you know, you have to like forego seeing people that you would pay like 100 quid to go and see normally, because there's just, you know, you got this impossible clash, like you desperately want to go and see I don't know, the Libertines and the Pet Shop Boys are on, so you can't.
So like, how do I pick between these two?
Exactly.
Right.
So you have to kill
and
your darlings a bit.
2 miles back, because Glastonbury's
fucking huge. You haven't been yourself.
No, but I've watched streams and videos.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you should. I mean, it's impossible to get a ticket, but you should try and go. But anyway, no, it had that same kind of moment of just like celebration of life.
Yeah,
which is just so awesome. And and doing theater is kind of being, you know, you're being a part of that, like of celebrating, like being present here together in something that is ephemeral and it will go away, and you can't just, you know, turn on HBO Max and watch it again. It's like it's a you know, and that memory of that thing and how you felt at the time kind of reverberates.
And it's not the same like streaming a show. Like, it's not like watching Hamilton on Disney Plus or Come From Away on Apple TV. It's just not the same. Or even watching like one of the National Theater performances, it's not the same as being in the room. It's just not.
Yeah, the room where it happened. I mean, yeah, it's true. It's it's why I love theater, and it's why it's more forgiving for actors as well. Because if you stuff up a line or a moment, you're just, oh god, and it's fine. You just have another. You just do it again the next
crack
night.
Tomorrow.
You just scrunch it up and throw it away. But yeah, no, it's amazing. I love theatre with all my heart, and I'm just talking to you, I'm just getting excited about doing it again tonight, really. It's like,
I know, I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, it's like, it seems, I will say, you know, I was talking to another friend of mine whose episode, we recorded an episode, and he was saying to me that every single time, every single curtain call that he goes and witnesses, he gets teary-eyed, and I'm the same. Like, I get emotional in that curtain call, not only because I maybe was moved by the piece, but like seeing the actors see the audience and that exchange that happens where like the audience is thanking everybody on stage and the actors are quite literally bowing to the audience. Like the actors are also saying thank you. They're like, thank you for being here. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That acknowledgement of what just happened, what we all went through it together is special.
Right. And just reappraising how lucky we are to be able to do it and that we shouldn't take it for granted, which we probably all were doing before the pandemic.
Oh, man. Like, and we feel it now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know what's nice is to be able to, and sorry, we should definitely wrap up, but just to make a point of saying that, like, with the debate around anti-Semitism, which is swirling around right now because of Kanye, because of Irving, what's his name, the basketball player?
Yeah, Kyrie, Chappelle.
Ryan, Dave Chappelle. You know, it's kind of terrifying and you can feel kind of helpless about like how, and it's just, I think, yeah, it's kind of amazing to have the opportunity to every night, like, put those myths to the sword or like contribute in a really useful, constructive way. It makes you feel like there are things that you can do to turn the tide.
And that fulfillment that we were talking about before too, like I imagine it makes it that much more fulfilling because you're like, oh no, I'm contributing to something.
No, it's good. People should see it.
I mean, I am hoping that you guys run, it's not limited, is it? No. Open-ended?
It's sort of open-ended. It depends on sales, I imagine, but it could run for a long time, but we'll
okay,
see.
Okay, great. Yeah. As long as we make it to award season, that's the, but the truth is it's the people that have seen it, I know have been incredibly moved and including me. And that's why I'm like, I was so excited to get to talk to you because it's always fun to talk to people that I know, but it's really fun and scary when I get to people I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this has been an adequately scary experience for you.
Absolutely terrifying.
Been terrifying to me.
Just terrifying. Yeah. As long as we're both terrified.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
We're all
on the
same page.
I'm going to have a very hot bath after this just to sort of, bring myself back to reality.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.